business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention. The court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 063090, United States of America versus Tariq Settles, appellant. Ms. Bryant for the appellant, Mr. Vavanuro for the appellee.
Good morning. May it please the court. Lisa Wright, representing Tariq Settles. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Settles was sentenced in the period before the Supreme Court decided Rita, at which time there was uncertainty in the circuits as to whether there was a presumption of reasonableness that applied to the sentencing guidelines. And at that time, the Department of Justice was arguing not only to courts of appeals, but to district courts that the guidelines should be presumed reasonable. And in this case, the government did tell Judge Collier that the guidelines were presumptively reasonable. And without Rita's guidance, it's not surprising the district court did treat the guideline range as a presumptive sentence, applying it unless, quote, some other factors suggested a, quote, lesser sentence. What Judge Collier did essentially is weigh the guideline range, which is just one factor under 3553A, against all the other 3553A factors. When what really should be done under 3553A is to look at all the factors and come up with the one single sentence that that district judge considers to be the one sentence that's sufficient but not greater than necessary to serve all the purposes of 3553A. Here, for example, the court's 57-month sentence should mean that 56 months would be insufficient, 58 months is greater than necessary. If the court didn't presume the guidelines were reasonable, it seems somewhat of a coincidence that the 57 months just happens to be the bottom of the guidelines. The district court also said it was applying the guideline range because it, quote, couldn't, quote, find a basis to depart downward from the guidelines, which again suggests a presumption that the guidelines apply unless some other factor.
Do you have to figure out in calculating the sentence, the guideline sentence, do you have to figure out whether you're going to depart before you do the 3553A factors?
I mean, do it a downward departure within the guidelines?
Yes.
I think you should do the within guidelines analysis first, yes. So you should figure out what the guideline range is, then figure out are any downward departures going to be granted.
And then do the 35.
And then 35. At that point, you've got your final guideline range, and that is your that is a factor to be considered.
Doesn't that downward departure analysis pretty much mirror the 3553A analysis in many cases?
Not at all, because the within guidelines talk about the heartland. If it's outside the heartland, there's certain specific favored departures.
Not mere, isn't it part of, subsumed within the 3553A?
I don't think so, because that is what you're doing when you're looking at departures is trying to figure out what would the Sentencing Commission think the guideline range should be. And after you know that number, then you've got your factor A4 under 3553A, which you then look at all the other factors along with that. And the judge then has a responsibility herself to decide, to really think about it and decide what is the sufficient but not greater than necessary sentence that I think. And of course, I remain cognizant of the guidelines, as they said in Gaul.
And here she said that the sentence was reasonable. I'm not sure she ever said that it had to be presumed reasonable.
Well, the government had told her that it was presumed reasonable, and she did use the word reasonable. And I think the point
using the word reasonable is a good thing, right?
I mean, well, I actually think it's a mistake for a district court to be worrying or thinking about reasonableness of a sentence, because their job is not to apply reasonable sentence. Reasonableness only comes into play when this court looks at the sentence. The only reason a district judge should be thinking about reasonableness is if they think their task is to not get reversed. That's the only reason to think about whether it's reasonable or not. They really shouldn't be concerning themselves with the reasonableness
of it. Kind of an odd system if the district court's not supposed to figure out whether the sentence is reasonable.
Well, obviously, if the court thinks it's the appropriate sentence, you know, the sentence that's sufficient but not greater than necessary, but it's very possible the district judge could do their analysis, come up with a sentence that they believe is the sentence that's sufficient but not greater than necessary, and this court would consider it unreasonable. But really, the district court can't be concerning itself with this court's job. It can only do its job. And I think in doing its job, it's important that it not give excessive weight or put a thumb on the scale, as some courts have said, to the guidelines. And it does appear that that's what happened here. So on I think in light of
As a matter of practice, aren't some district court judges going to give far more weight to the guidelines than other district court judges? And is that a problem?
I mean, I think as long as they are considering it as a factor with every other factor, you know, I think they can, in certain cases, they may feel like the case is very like the mine run of cases or whatever, and they want to give it more credence, or they may have more faith in the Sentencing Commission's process of coming up with the guidelines.
But I thought the post-Booker, post-Gaul, post-Rita era was, some judges might say, the guidelines are good, I like the guidelines seem reasonable, and go through the 3553A, but usually end up with the guidelines. Other judges, district judges, might say no, and do a more analysis that resembled what was done pre-guidelines. Mm-hmm. And both would be, from the appellate perspective, permissible. Is that not the way it's supposed to work?
I think as long as the judges who are ending up at the guidelines are doing their own independent 3553A analysis, that it's okay for them to end up in the guidelines. But, you know, the Supreme Court in Redis, I believe it was Redis, said the reason we're presuming reasonableness on appeal is because there's been a double determination. And so it really is important that both, that the district court do its own analysis, and it just can't be, you know, sort of, you know, tainted by all those years of mandatory guidelines. It's got to break out of that and really look at 3553A, do its own analysis, and then I think, yes, some judges may come out more frequently. But I think if you look at what Judge Collier said, and particularly in light of, you know, the advice she got, which was, you know, perfectly legitimate argument before Rita, I think we have to think that the judge didn't exactly do that, and Mr. Settles should go back. We should get a chance to do it right and have Judge Collier be very clear that she's doing her own analysis, just considering the guidelines, remaining cognizant of them, but not landing there unless she's persuaded that other factors, because really it's a question of, it shouldn't be other factors versus the guidelines. It shouldn't be a weighing process. And I think, you know, they're, given some of the comments the judge made about the use of the acquitted conduct, I think we, you know, can have some reason to believe the judge might actually come out differently if she didn't have that thumb on the scale, because she did say, you know, when I became a judge, I was astonished to find out that acquitted conduct goes in the guidelines. But then she did as she had to do, and she applied the law, and she said, you know, I have to call it as I see it. Legally, I think I have to add these 4 points in. And then she said, but, you know, appeal it, and I'll be happy to know if I'm wrong.
She had to do that to calculate the proper guidelines range.
That's right.
She could have then varied downward, saying, I don't like the use of acquitted conduct here, does not promote respect for the law, so I'm going to vary downward.
And I guess what I'm saying is, I think if she had not been applying this thumb on the scale to the guidelines, she might have been inclined to have done that, because she did give some indication that she was troubled as a matter of policy. I'm not saying she would take the whole 4 points off, but she might have come out a little differently than the Sentencing Commission did. But I don't think she felt free to do that. If you read, obviously it's what she said, you have to, it does appear when she calls them reasonable, when she says, I can't find a basis to depart downward, and all those things suggest, in our view, the incorrect standard. So we would ask that in light of the Supreme Court's intervening decision in Rita, the court remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wright.
May it please the court. My name is Muyiwa Bamaduro, and I'm here on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, appellant's sentence should be affirmed because when he was sentenced by the district court judge, she did not impermissibly presume that the guideline range was reasonable. United States v. Booker, and most recently in Gaul versus United States, the Supreme Court provided instructions regarding sentencing proceedings. The court explained that a district court judge in all sentencing proceedings should first begin by correctly calculating the applicable guideline range. That is the initial starting point, a benchmark, as the court explained. After giving both parties an opportunity to argue as to whatever sentence they deem is reasonable or appropriate in this case, then a district court judge should then consider the 3553A factors to determine whether or not they support whatever sentence is being sought.
Do departures have a place in the current system, or is it just the 3553A variances?
Well, we would submit that based on what Gaul has stated, that once you first determine what the guideline range is, then you consider the 3553A factors in addition to the arguments by the parties to determine whether or not a downward departure may be necessary.
I guess my question is determining whether to depart part of calculating the proper guidelines range, or does that occur after what Gall calls calculating the proper guideline range?
Well, I believe determining whether or not depart would occur after the judge has considered the arguments and also the 3553A factors. In this situation, district court judge followed the prescribed instructions of the Supreme Court to the letter. She calculated properly the appellant's applicable guideline range to be 57 to 71 months. Thereafter, she considered arguments from defense counsel in which he urged the district court judge to sentence appellant to 24 months. In addition, she asked that he be placed on supervised release for a term whatever term is determined to be reasonable by the court. Then after that, she entertained appellant's plea for leniency. Only after considering those things, in addition to the 3553A factors, did she conclude that a 57-month sentence was reasonable. What she did, in effect, was follow Gall and Booker to the letter. In this situation, because of that, we submit that there was no procedural unreasonableness on her part.
What about the acquitted conduct? In particular, is it the government's position that a district court judge has to take into account the acquitted conduct, or could a district court judge, after calculating the guidelines range, say, I don't think acquitted conduct promotes respect for the law, which is one of the 3553A factors, and therefore I don't use acquitted conduct, I'm varying downward. Would that be permissible post Kimbrough and Gall?
Well, post Kimbrough and Gall, it would be an abuse of the discretion standard, as the court has stated, and
it would, okay,
abuse of discretion standard. Mm-hmm. And so as Your Honor alluded earlier, that a district court judge could state that, you know, it doesn't promote the respect of the law by considering acquitted conduct, and therefore here are my reasons for not considering it. That would, of course, come before this court on abuse of discretion standard. Which,
and would it be? Would the government argue that's an abuse of discretion?
Yes, the government would argue that's abuse of discretion.
And how's that consistent with Kimbrough and Gall, which were designed to give district judges the discretion to make choices like this?
Well, the reason why is because, from the government's position, the district court judge should consider the background and characteristics of all defendants, whether it is acquitted conduct or conduct not charged. That's based on 18 U.S.C. 3661. Because that is rooted within a statute, a district court should consider it. And if a district court judge does decide in his discretion that based on a lot of amount of reason that they decide not to consider it, the government's position is because of this statute, the court should consider it.
So the district court judges after Kimbrough have discretion to decide that the crack powder guidelines give too heavy a sentence, right? A district court judge has that discretion to express a policy disagreement with the guidelines. But you're saying that district court judge does not have the discretion to express a policy disagreement with the use of acquitted conduct?
Well, the crack and cocaine disparities is a policy disagreement. However, when considering acquitted conduct or conduct in which was found by the preponderance of the evidence, then we would submit that that's not necessarily a policy argument in that case. In that situation, you're dealing with facts.
Why is that not a policy argument? The use of that's a huge policy question, isn't it? Whether to count acquitted conduct. Someone goes to trial, gets acquitted, and then is sentenced as if they're convicted. That seems like a pretty serious policy issue.
Well, again, Your Honor, it is rooted in 18 U.S.C. 3661, where it provides the district court judge the ability to consider all conduct irrespective of whether or not.
It doesn't say they have to.
It says they may. You're correct. And because of that, we submit that the district court judge should consider acquitted conduct in determining whether or not in determining the right or the applicable guideline range.
Yeah, they definitely have to do it in calculating the guideline range under Gall. The question is whether they can then vary as a matter of policy downward based on policy disagreement with the use of acquitted conduct. I'm interested in whether, in this case, for example, the district court judge talked about how district court judges have different policies on the use of acquitted conduct. I'm wondering if it's the government's position that that's permissible. Can one judge say, I count acquitted conduct, and another judge say, I'm not going to use acquitted conduct, and both be upheld on appeal?
Well, it is our position that the district court judge should consider it. And if they were not to consider it, then we would submit that they abused the discretion
So your answer is the district court judges can't decide for themselves. They have to consider it. They can't vary downward based on acquitted conduct.
Yes, Your Honor. And unless the court has any other questions, we submit that the district court judge did not impermissibly presume that the guideline range was reasonable, and therefore appellant's sentence should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Bramador.
Thank you.
And just one point, just on that last point, I think that it would not be an abuse of discretion for the court to do that, and I think that's exactly the question that the Supreme Court cleared up in Kimbrough. I mean, that was a debate going on, and now I think we have our answer. It's not an abuse of discretion to do that.
And it's within the district court's discretion, but the district court, it's hard to say under these cases that the district court can't take account of acquitted conduct.
That's right. And I think here we have a glimpse that the court, if she'd understood her full authority, when she said, I'll be happy to know I'm wrong, if it turns out, that suggests a tendency to go slightly downward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. Case is submitted.